Justice Bradley will not be participating. 07AP869D, Office of Lawyer Regulation versus Thomas J. Molinaro, Dean Diedrich, representing Mr. Molinaro. Attorney Diedrich.
Please the court. Madam Chief Justice and members of the court, my name is Dean Diedrich of Ruder Ware, and I'm representing Attorney Thomas Molinaro in this proceeding. In preparing for this case, I read back through the briefs that the parties had submitted to the court, and I came to a realization. The realization was that both parties have done a good job of presenting to you the legalities of what we have in front of us today. And perhaps, if I may, the fight that we have in front of us today. But I ask this court, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here today, because this case needs something more than what the paper has put down and what the paper has said to you. This is a case about a sole practitioner who has been practicing for 30 years. 28 years at the time this case was brought, and who has been asked to respond to a series of inquiries from the Office of Lawyer Regulation regarding his conduct. This is a case involving 2.5 days of hearing. This is a case involving, as the court knows, a number of exhibits and a number of documents provided in the record. The end result of the proceedings thus far was a recommendation from the referee for a 30-month suspension of the license of Attorney Molinaro. There is, as the court knows, in reviewing that document, no clear explanation of the basis for that 30-month suspension. The court knows that the record shows that the Office of Lawyer Regulation sought a 24-month suspension on 12 counts, of which 5 of those counts, the referee concluded there was not a finding to go forward and recommend discipline. This is a case involving a sole practitioner who handled a personal injury matter for a friend who was a client. And in doing that, agreed that from the proceeds of the settlement of the case would handle payment of various expenses, would handle the processing of bills and exchanging of payments for that particular client. And that is what Attorney Molinaro did. Attorney Molinaro knew that the money had to be placed into a separate interest-bearing account. The record before you acknowledges that that account did not have the correct title. The record does not show that there was any mishandling of those funds when Attorney Molinaro became aware of the fact that those funds were in an improperly titled account. Attorney Molinaro transferred those funds into his trust account and administered the funds through the trust account process. Was the trust account records perfect? No. And I'll discuss that in a minute.
Mr. Diedrich,
yes.
Was the settlement amount 1.3 or 1.4 million?
The settlement amount was $1.4 million. And that leads me to one of, I think, the most important points, to again make this clear, because the paper doesn't make it clear. When Attorney Molinaro engaged in the representation of Mr. Minton, they signed an agreement for contingent fee, one-third. Not unusual by any means, not out of the norm by any means. It was appendix one, page 136. It's clear in the record what that agreement said. It's clear that the record shows that the settlement was $1.4 million. Appendix page 135 is the letter from counsel indicating that the settlement is $1.4 million. What doesn't show well in the paper, but what is clear, is agreements were reached between counsel for the defendant and Mr. Molinaro on how the proceeds were going to be distributed. There was discussion about the payments that were going to be made to the minor children. There was discussion regarding payment directly to the guardian ad litem. All of those factors come into play in the confusion that has arisen regarding the amount of the fees that Attorney Molinaro was entitled to. And there is criticism by the Office of Lawyer Regulation in its brief that Attorney Molinaro did not back down from his understanding from two very simple documents. And a titled agreement for contingent fee and a letter that says the settlement is $1.4 million. If this court is going to go to the point to say that these other agreements that counsel reached during the course of the distribution of the funds now changes the fee arrangement that is written and agreed to between the client and the attorney, we now come to a point where that fee agreement is not what's important. What is important then in the eyes of the OLR is how they think that fee should be calculated. That's what this case is about. There's a personal side to this case. It's not all laid out on those pieces of paper in that brief. It's not a case that follows what's been argued by OLR regarding discipline. This isn't a case of a lawyer that didn't file taxes for 7 years. This isn't a case about a lawyer that took $265,000 from the estate, that filed papers with the court that said that this money has been taken by the estate and put into the estate account, and in fact it was taken by the lawyer. That's not what these facts show. What this relates to is the representation of a client. A fee was earned. That fee was paid out through agreements with opposing counsel, and there is a fight over how that fee was calculated. That's what this case is about.
How much money are we talking about in the fee?
The difference that the counsel for Office of Lawyer Regulation suggests is the proper calculation should be $361,000, and as we submit, the proper calculation is $466,000. I'm sorry, I think counsel for OLR agrees it should be $9,000 less than the $466,000. That's what we're talking about. And of course, $466,000 is one-third of $1,000,004.
Does that cover the child settlement too?
Yes.
And he was going to get one-third of each of them?
Yes. The agreement with opposing counsel was $1,000,004. Then they had further agreements on how we're going to divvy this up. What's going to be attributed to the child? What's going to be attributed to Mr. Mitten, the principal plaintiff?
How does this $9,000 difference arise? That is, why the difference in calculation?
There are two bases for what I believe is the difference in calculation. The first one is that as the package was all pulled together, there was an agreement that there should be a little more money put into the settlement that would be attributable to the children. And instead of $15,000 being the amount that's attributable to the plaintiff, Mr. Minton, $15,000 is attributable to the children. So it said that OLR says we should look at a lesser number because of that. In addition...
That only accounts for $5,000.
Right. In addition, the argument that is brought forward here is that the $10,000 fee that was paid directly by the insurance company to the guardian ad litem should not be included and counted. That, in fact, is always, as you know, typically paid by plaintiff's counsel. I've taken out of the fees owed to the attorney representing the plaintiff. That, Chief, is our understanding of the differences that have arisen and how all our views what the fees should be and what Mr. Molinaro views the fees should be.
Does this amount to double billing by him?
Your Honor, it does not amount to double billing because, as the agreement says, the settlement is $1.4 million. Clearly stated by the defense attorney in the letter. It's found on Appendix 135. That's what the agreement was. And there was no dispute by the client.
Mr. Diedrich, is he including the $10,000 paid to the guardian ad litem for the children as part of the settlement?
That particular amount, Justice Crooks, is money that would be included as part of the total settlement, but a separate check was issued to the guardian ad litem attorney.
From him or from the insurance company?
From the insurance company.
But it's included, from your point of view, in the $1.4 million.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Counselor, isn't it typical that either it comes out of the attorney's one-third, or he gets one-third plus costs, and it comes out of the principal's money off the top?
The way that we feel that it's handled, and it was handled in this case, was it comes out of the fees earned by the attorney.
Okay. But just say you'd done it the other way around, was a direct payment, he still would get a third of $1.4 million, just that the principal would get less. Correct?
And the $1.4 million is the key. OLR does not believe that's appropriate.
Okay. Thank you.
There's a dispute here regarding the payment of $44,000 into the account held at the Marathon Bank, and then the taking of that money out. Again, the paper has shown, we provided the transcript record as to the payment. What is being, again, debated here is, do we look out for the interests of the client? That's what Attorney Molinaro has stated that he did. There was a dispute. We are arguing over whether the word dispute is appropriate in this proceeding. This is a matter of an attorney representing clients for 28 years, and we're arguing over whether or not the words dispute are appropriate in some of our responses to OLR. But the concern here was for the client, and that needs to be given the human side. That needs to be given recognition in this proceeding, and I submit that it is not.
Mr. Diedrich, there were many counts here.
Yes.
Some the referee found were not supported.
Yes. Right?
But there were still many counts that were supported. Does your client admit to any violations of the code?
Yes, he does, Your Honor, and I'll highlight those for you. We do in our paper, and we submit here. It's not a full accounting given to client Mitt. There is not paperwork produced at the hearing. We believe that warrants a public reprimand. There was not all of the subsidiary ledgers maintained on the trust account. We submit that warrants a public reprimand. Because, again, I ask you to look at, beyond the paper, to look at this case. This is an attorney for 28 years that has been representing clients. This is an attorney who has not had any other discipline. This is an attorney who has not had any other complaints or concerns regarding his trust account. This is an attorney that provided to the referee testimony how the trust account was balanced every month. There are no subsidiary ledgers. There are no monthly ledgers per client. It's acknowledged in the record. We acknowledge that warrants a public reprimand. What we ask you to do, however, is to look at the human side of this case, not just what's on the piece of paper. There is challenge and debate as to the responses made by Attorney Molinaro to the Office of Lawyer Regulation throughout the course of this investigation and proceeding. There are an assessment of costs against the Office of Lawyer by the Office of Lawyer Regulation against Attorney Molinaro. We again ask you to look beyond the paper. Because what does the paper say? What the paper shows you, and I refer you to appendix in our original brief, 161 to 168, a 33-month investigation. Now, I am not talking a 33-month investigation from the start to the completion of the hearing. I am talking a 33-month investigation from the start to when the preliminary investigative report was finalized and final comments were allowed and then submitted to the preliminary review committee. Because that's the end of the investigation. It goes on from there. And we are talking about a proceedings with a 16-month time frame of no contact. Communication with Office of Lawyer Regulation, submittal of over 46 responses to the Office of Lawyer Regulation for information they've requested. There is concern that when we provided that, we weren't providing everything the exact same words, the exact same time. There is a 16-month delay in that process. Some would suggest, why didn't Attorney Molinaro call and ask what's going on? Learned a long time ago, you don't stick a stick in front of the sleeping grizzly bear. And that's what we're dealing with here. This is a human matter involving a sole practitioner in practice. This proceeding was brought. Office of Lawyer Regulation has every right to bring that proceeding. But there is another side to this. I submit to you that costs in this matter should not be assessed at apparently the request of Office of Lawyer Regulation, which is full assessment with no conclusion, no recommendation from the referee.
Mr. Diedrich, we're going to handle costs separately.
Thank you.
In the sense that under the rules, the OLR will put in costs and you will have an opportunity to dispute that cost. So I don't think this is the time, and I don't want you to spend your time in oral argument on that. What about, so are those the only two factual allegations that you admit to, or three?
If I may, Chief Justice, just to make sure, because I want to make sure that I understand correctly that there will be a further opportunity on costs, because I'm not sure that's how counsel for oral argument is.
Okay, well, that's the way I view it at the moment. It's not, if I am wrong in giving you this advice,
okay, thank you.
You get the correct procedure.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Diedrich, was there any explanation given for the 16 months of no contact by OLR?
There was not, Justice Crooks, at least. I did not ask for an explanation.
Oh, and I understand why you would not, but you haven't had one since?
Again, I've not asked for that, no. I've not asked for that information. I think that the record in this case shows very diligent efforts by the Office of Lawyer Regulation and very diligent efforts by Attorney Molinaro to respond. And I think that's acknowledged by the referee in the referee's rulings in regards to count 10. To further respond, Chief Justice, to your request and your regarding admissions. The other issue that is before this court involves count 12 and count 13. And that involves the holding of funds in the trust account. There is an admission, Chief Justice, that those funds stayed in the account. We have provided an explanation for that. We do not believe that warrants discipline. So we have responded and provided information with regard to that, and it is not really challenged as to what transpired in that particular case. We have offered and provided the transcript as to the explanation as to why those funds were in that account. And I again ask you, as it relates to that, to look beyond the briefs and look at the human side of this case. This is a matter involving a sole practitioner who, at the end of the year, is trying to decide not only what to do with his practice, but to deal with the press of business. And that's what, in fact, this matter is about.
Now, counsel, in the record, Attorney Molinaro talked about, quote, not creating a paper trail regarding the $15,000 that Bob Mitten contributed to the miners' settlement. What was that? What did that comment mean? You don't remember the comment, fine.
No, I can explain that, Chief Justice. The agreement was, at the final distribution of the funds, there was an amount set that was going to be attributed to Mr. Mitt, the principal plaintiff, an amount allocated for the children. Guardian ad litem wanted more money to go to the children. That was going to be set aside into the appropriate escrow accounts. The guardian ad litem wanted more money. $15,000 was taken away from the lump sum that was going to be attributed to the plaintiff, Mr. Mitten, was assigned as part of the value, the money that was then converted into the appropriate escrow account for the children. With regards to the paper trail, there is the money was set up. There is a letter in the record showing how that money is set up. It's a letter from the defense counsel. And there was no need to have any more trail, if you will, as to that $15,000 transfer. It was assigned to the children instead of being placed as part of the amount attributable to the plaintiff. And it's documented within that record. I believe I am at a point, Your Honor, where I would like to close by saying to the court...
Before you do that, what about restitution?
The issue with regard to restitution, Your Honor, is the principal debate regarding the fees. Now the statement is, well, make restitution. Ignore the fee agreement. Ignore what the amount is. Just pay the money. That we acknowledge that there were areas where the records were not kept as they should have been. But this is not a case of stealing money. This is not a case of failing to file taxes for 7 years. With regard to restitution, Chief Justice, that depends upon the view as it relates to the fees, and I think I've expressed that as to what our view is with regard to the fees.
So it's your position that if the fee agreement is valid as you interpret it, no restitution is due, correct?
And with regard to the fee agreement, if I may close, sign fee agreement, sat down and discuss it with the client, that's what we're supposed to do.
Is the client complaining? How did this get to the OLR? The
client has not complained. The OLR has, in the course of their review of the records regarding the Cook matter, asked to see various records and then pursued it from there.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
That's quite all right. I would simply close by indicating to this court that this matter requires you to look at the facts as it relates to the practice of law, as it relates to the human side of the practice of law. We have provided written argument on both sides to give you all sorts of information to work with, but I ask you to look at what the human side of what this case is about.
Mr. Dietrich, wasn't there some mention of a $44,500 amount which your client allegedly did not report on his income taxes? Was that an issue in this matter?
It was an issue in this matter, and I did address it from the reflection of that the money was taken and put in back into the account to preserve it because there was a dispute over whether or not the workers' comp carrier was satisfied that enough money was there to protect them from future claims. Now, OLR suggests that this is all just a deliberate attempt to hide things. Attorney Molinaro was looking out for the interests of his client. Olar does not think that's true. At some point in time, you have to respect that that's what we're about.
Where is that money now?
The money was taken out of that account because our view is that everything was resolved with workers' comp, and it has now been passed on to Attorney Molinaro because, yeah, from our position, it was fees, but it was put into that account.
And then has he reported that on his income tax?
In the next year, of course.
Is there an issue of a divorce going on at this time as well?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. During this course of time, there was a divorce pending. There is a dispute regarding one question in a very, very contested divorce proceeding. That's been explained in the written materials.
It was a response to a deposition?
It was a response to a written interrogatory, to one question in a significant number of written interrogatories. And yes, there's a divorce proceeding going on during this course of time. That may be some of the reason why OLR believes things were done improperly. We submit to you that both the record in this case shows why these steps were taken by Attorney Molinaro. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diedrich. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Keith Saleen, Office of the Lawyer Regulation, representing OLR.
May it please the Court, my name is Keith Saleen. I'm with the Office of Lawyer Regulation. It's my privilege today to represent the OLR and the public interest in this case. This is a case about a human, and this human's name is Robert Mitten.
I'm afraid we're going to have trouble hearing you. I know you're very soft-spoken. Why don't you raise the podium? There's a button somewhere. No, it's closer to the top. We're very high-tech, Mr. Saleen. Is it in the middle?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good.
Good. Robert Mitten, by the record, is not even aware that $9,630 that he's entitled to, he has not received. He is the younger brother of a lifelong friend of Attorney Molinaro, who and with his brother, trusted Attorney Molinaro to handle their affairs with competence and integrity. Since 2001, certainly since February of 2002, Attorney Molinaro has known that he has that much of his client's and his friend's money. It's 2009, and that money has not been restored. And as Referee Hansen found, there's not an indication in the record that Robert Mitten is even aware of this circumstance.
You say the amount is owed, and that's based on your interpretation of the fee agreement. Is that what we're talking about here?
We are indeed disputing the fee agreement. We believe that the referee's findings regarding the fee are appropriate. They're based on the actual documentation that Attorney Molinaro signed and that the court directed in the minor settlement of the action. We think it's consistent with this court's policy to interpret it the way that OLR has interpreted it. And it is, the way OLR has interpreted the fee agreement is consistent not only with the documentation, but with the actual transactions of the funds and the accounting.
But it is based on your interpretation of the fee agreement, just so I understand where this money is coming from.
It's based on that, Your Honor, yes, but there are several reasons why it should be interpreted that way.
Well, I understand that. That's okay. Your argument. I just wanted to be sure that I was starting in the same place that you were.
Right.
Thank you.
OLR's position in this case, members of the court, is that the two-year suspension is justified for four reasons. First of all, because Attorney Molinaro dishonestly converted $9,600 from a disabled friend and client, that he wrongfully evaded approximately $10,000 in federal and state income tax by shifting income from 2001 to 2002. Third, that he made misrepresentations to OLR during the investigative process, and this is our cross-appeal regarding count 10. The issue in count 10 is not whether he provided information. The issue in count 10 is the veracity of the information that he provided. And finally, that during this particular proceeding itself, Mr. Molinaro made several misleading assertions in his answer and during the hearing. The brief I provided you gives some information about the sanction, and I know that you have that and can see that. Referee Hansen, in his findings, regarding the fee and the proper way to interpret the fee agreement found that Mr. Molinaro's position on that was not credible for several reasons and found that it was dishonest for several reasons. First of all, with regard to the credibility of that interpretation. The fee that he alleges is not what he had negotiated. If you look at the referee's report and you look at the Exhibit 47, you can see that he had a contingent fee agreement. He had a settlement for Robert, his client, with whom he had the contingent fee agreement, and that settlement amount was $1.085 million. And that's the basis for a $361,666 contingent fee in that matter. The referee found that he was not entitled to a contingent fee for the minor settlement amount, which had a present value of $215,000. Instead, Mr. Molinaro negotiated a $90,000 fee for the minor settlement, and that has been confirmed in Exhibits 47, 48, and 50, one of which is the actual court order saying so. The other is an agreement that Mr. Molinaro signed saying that the $90,000 was his fee for the minor settlement and was received in the payment that he got from the insurance company. The referee further found that it was illogical for Mr. Molinaro to credit the GAL payment, but not his minor settlement fee. And it makes some sense because both were part of the $1.4 million. So were he to say, well, I'm going to subtract the $10,000 GAL fee, it would also make sense that he would also subtract the fee that was paid to him. And this is more significant for the next reason. The $1.4 million is composed of four parts. And we all agree on how that's composed. Mr. Molinaro testified to it himself in page 545. It includes the $1.085 million for Robert, $215,000 present value for the minors, $90,000 for his minor settlement fee, and $10,000 for the GAL. If you accept Mr. Molinaro's position here, you are saying that he is entitled to take the $90,000 and charge one-third on that $90,000. OLR believes that is unreasonable, it's contrary to policy, and it does not protect the public interest to interpret that agreement that way. Referee Hansen further found regarding the credibility of the fee claim that it is inconsistent with what Molinaro initially told OLR before OLR knew how much he had really received. And finally, he found that it failed to reconcile the accounting of funds. In fact, it would still show that Mr. Molinaro has $4,630 of his client's money. With regard to the dishonesty, there are three particular reasons in addition to these that referee Hansen relied upon to find that this conversion was dishonest. And this is very important. First of all, he did not follow his normal procedures for handling these kinds of settlements. The evidence in the record and the findings of referee Hansen indicate that he did not prepare a settlement statement or provide an accounting to Mr. Nitton. Now, although he kept other ledgers that showed that at that particular time he knew how to do the documentation and ledgers to properly process a contingent fee settlement, he did not do so with regard to Mr. Nitton. Second, Mr. Molinaro did not, according to referee Hansen, notify the lien holder that he had received the funds in May of 2001. In fact, the lien holder found out on its own and contacted Mr. Molinaro. In response to this, the referee found that Mr. Molinaro rationalized his failure to notify the lien holder was due to a need to finalize the settlement. That's in his answer in paragraph 52. And he could not finalize the settlement, in fact, without notifying the lien holder, according to referee Hansen and the testimony at the trial, including Molinaro's own witness. The truth also is that despite not telling the lien holder, and despite having a reason that did not make any sense to referee Hansen nor does it to OLR, that he had already paid himself in July, despite this assertion. The referee next found, with regard to dishonesty, that Mr. Molinaro misrepresented settlement information to the lien holder. In December, he had told the lien holder that he had received as fees and costs $479,363.14. He knew it to the penny, and it was exact in his books. When the lien holder demanded documentation to show how that was calculated and what documentation supported that, Molinaro provided it in January. That prompted a January 18th letter from the attorney for the lien holder, Mr. Cafaros, telling him that these numbers did not make sense. At the point Mr. Molinaro received that January 18th letter, according to referee Hansen, Molinaro was aware that Cafaro knew both how much Molinaro had really taken and how much Molinaro was owed. And then he says, rather than reimbursement, Molinaro instead told Cafaro, from the children's settlement, my attorney fees were $100,000, from which I paid the guardian ad litem bill, which was $10,000. This accounting enabled Mr. Molinaro to cover the $8,610.14 overcharge. And as a parenthetical, that was the amount at that time. Other things happened in the case later. He continues, Cafaro had the minor settlement documents and knew that the claim of a $100,000 fee was inconsistent with those documents. But he would, and I think there's an error there, the referee says he would have known. I think what he meant to say was he would not have known how the checks were written or whether Molinaro might actually have paid the guardian ad litem. Further, the referee stated, Molinaro's statement about paying the guardian ad litem bill was false. In fact, Mr. Molinaro had told OLR that in November of 2004. And the final reason referee Hansen found that this fee was dishonestly converted is because Molinaro gave contradictory statements regarding his fees to OLR. Referee's report beginning at page 21. Referee Hansen said, on February 11, 2005, Molinaro told OLR that the minor settlement fee was $90,000. This was before OLR knew that Molinaro had actually taken and retained more than the $90,000 minor settlement fee would justify. On March 29, 2005, Molinaro gave OLR another accounting at Exhibit 100. That accounting showed that Molinaro retained $479,363.14 in fees and costs. At this point, for the first time, Molinaro told OLR his fee included the $10,000 for the guardian ad litem. And with reference to that, I would refer you to Investigator Warner's testimony in the transcript beginning at page 125, and Mr. Molinaro's earlier statement to OLR in November of 2004 at Exhibit 88. Page 4, where he said his total fees and costs were $1,000. That is the information that the referee considered regarding the fee. It's all documented in the record. It's consistent with the court order. It's consistent with documents that Mr. Molinaro himself had signed. It's the only proper way to look at the interpretation of the fee agreement. The referee was clearly convinced by that, very clear in his articulation of it, and his court should uphold it.
Why did it take so long, and why was there this long delay in the investigation, if there was?
Your Honor, we don't dispute that there was a 16-month delay. The record does not contain an explanation. I can tell you that there was a 16-month period of time with no activity. I could offer you an explanation. What I would say is that OLR did not delay this intentionally, nor does OLR believe Mr. Molinaro was prejudiced in any way because of the delay. But there was a 16-month period.
Thank you, Mr. Sully.
The second reason why OLR believes that a two-year suspension is appropriate in this case...
You're not defending the referee's time period for suspension? What did the referee give?
The referee recommended 30 months.
That's more than you asked.
It is, Your Honor.
You are still asking for 24 months.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I just wanted to clear...
Yes, Your Honor. I understand. Thank you. The second reason relates to the income tax evasion, which is a shifting of income from 2001 to 2002. In both Count 9, as part of Count 9 and in Count 13, there's about $60,000 that was shifted from 2001 to 2002. And according to the estimate that our office prepared in its trial brief at R15 and our referee Hansen adopted in his findings in R24, would indicate that this was done for the purpose of evading taxes and that the tax incentive approached $10,000 when you consider both the federal and state tax advantages. The timing of these transfers was done such that they occurred right at the relevant time period. The transfers back to his account were in the new year. He did not report these fees and funds as income in 01, but did in 02, we believe. And his assertions about the reasons for these are not true. With regard to the $44,500, Jeffrey Hansen found that his assertion he transferred the funds because of the workers' comp dispute is not true. The purpose was to, appears to be to evade taxes, not to respond to a workers' compensation dispute. Referee Hansen found that this was true for several reasons in his report, and it contains the citations to the record. Molinaro first moved the $44,500 without even informing the workers' comp carrier. You can see the testimony of their attorney at pages 119 and 20 in the transcript. He moved the funds on the last day of the tax year. He made inconsistent statements about the reasons for the transfer. He first falsely told OLR that TIG was claiming additional funds should be paid to them. This is in the referee's report at R27. It's part of Exhibit 105, and in his answer to paragraph 51. At trial, the attorney for TIG...
Mr. Lane, can I interrupt you for a minute, because I don't understand this. Is there an overlap between the $60,000 you were talking about and the $44,500?
The $44,500, Your Honor, is part of the $60,000.
All right.
The $44,500 is in count 9, and 15.9 is in count 13.
All right, thank you.
After Attorney Caffaro testified that they had never asked claimed additional funds, at page 122 of the transcript, Molinaro subsequently testified that the funds were then potentially to be paid to Mr. Mitten, and that's at pages 496 to 498 of the transcript. The second thing that Referee Hansen found that indicated that this rationale was false is that he returned the funds to his business account before the dispute was resolved. The truth is it was never really resolved as it related to the cushion for the workers' comp carrier. Molinaro, at the same time, according to Referee Hansen, was holding other earned fees in trust that we'll talk about in the ledgers in just a minute. The actual ledgers for these fees that were received in November and December 2001 are at Exhibit 112 in the transcript, and I would encourage you to take a look at them because they are extremely revealing. You look at the 15 client ledgers, and you see that in every circumstance other than this, prior to November of 01, subsequent to December of 01, Mr. Molinaro kept these client ledgers with meticulous perfection. But in November 01 and in December 01, when he received earned fees and reimbursements of advance costs, neither of which should go in a trust account, he put them in the trust account. That's very clear. If you, if you juxtapose that with his answer to the complaint in paragraph 101, where he says that he had to determine what amounts were advance fees, or earned fees and advance costs, you can see that that could not possibly be true, could never have been true. Because to the penny, his ledgers already showed exactly what those amounts were. Moreover, neither one of them should have ever gone in the trust account. Up until the time of the hearing, that was his position. When his secretary testified at the hearing, she revealed the true reason at page 356. She said Mr. Molinaro was going to talk with his accountant, Mr. Karnitz, to see if he could prepay some office expenses before the end of the year, like insurance or things on that order. Molinaro, later during the hearing, admitted that his purpose was to reduce his taxes. At page 518, he said that he intended to ask his accountant, how can we minimize my tax impact for this year and prepay as many expenses as possible? More enlightening is the comment at the end of page 518, top of page 519. In the past years, I paid a couple hundred bucks, maybe up to $700 or $800, but I think I really got nailed in 01. End of quote. At the hearing, Molinaro talked about whether he had hidden this money. He made this comment in response to counsel's question, his counsel's question at the hearing. Did you hide this money, Mr. Molinaro? Page 518. I did not. I was right out in the open. I put it in accounts that anybody and their mother could see. It's absolutely false. It's exactly where the tax authorities would not. Exactly. And the only place they would not. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. With regard to our cross-appeal on count 10, OLR contends that it's not Molinaro's failure to provide information, but the veracity of the information that should have resulted in the referee concluding a violation of count 10. The referee found these facts. First of all, that Molinaro gave contradictory statements regarding his fees to OLR, exactly as charged in the complaint. He found, as I read to you earlier, that he had told OLR the minor settlement fee was $90,000, exhibit 97 at 10, question 24. This was before OLR knew how much he had really taken. Subsequently, on March 29th, he gave another accounting that had the GAL explanation. Second, referee Hansen found that he misrepresented that he himself, that Molinaro, had paid the GAL fee. Referee Hansen said in his report, page 12, the defendants had paid the GAL directly. We know that to be true, but on March 29th, he gave OLR the explanation, saying that Molinaro told OLR his fee included $10,000 for the GAL. He subsequently said that Molinaro's statement about paying the GAL fee was false. It was false when he said it to the referee. It was false when he said it to OLR. Referee Hansen also found that his misrepresentation of the $44,500 transfer that he used to shift income was due to the workers' comp dispute. And I highlighted some of these facts to the court before in Referee Hansen's findings, but again, I would refer you to his report, pages 15, and again at pages 25 and 26. Yet, Molinaro, saying this to the referee during the hearing is false. Saying it to OLR during the investigation is also false. And for that reason, we believe you should grant OLR's appeal regarding count 10. The final point with regard to OLR's position in this case that a two-year suspension is appropriate is because of the misleading assertions that Mr. Molinaro made during the actual proceeding after filing the complaint. It relates to six particular issues. The settlement deposits that he made initially when he received the written funds, his failure to notify the lien holder, his position on the fee entitlement, his transfer of the $44,500 relating to the income shifting from 01 to 02, the return of that money back in February of 02, and the reason for the November-December trust account deposits in November and December of 01. With regard to the settlement deposits, Mr. Molinaro said he handled the funds as if they were in a trust account. Answer, paragraph 42. The referee found he commingled his minor settlement fee and his Mitten settlement's funds, page 9. He made no client ledgers and zeroed out costs on Mitten's ledger without reflecting any payment, page 10. Further, Referee Hansen found some facts that would indicate that Molinaro knew at the time he opened that Marathon account that the funds were not in trust. See his report at pages 14 and 15. Finally, he found that Molinaro's treatment of the Mitten settlement funds varied from his normal practice, page 15. Molinaro said, all funds were together until payments were made and a determination of entitlement to funds was made. Answer, paragraph 43. The referee found Molinaro transferred $950,000 of those funds to his business account without preparing a settlement statement or an accounting to Mr. Mitten. He failed to notify TIG of the receipt of the funds, failed to pay them until November, but had taken his own fee in July, notwithstanding. With regard to the failure to notify the lien holder, Molinaro said, notice was not provided until he was sure of full settlement of the litigation. Answer, paragraph 52. Referee Hansen found at page 17, nothing prevented Molinaro from informing TIG of the settlement. Prompt notification is the normal practice. Molinaro could not finalize the settlement without informing TIG. Molinaro's rationale about full settlement did not prevent him from paying himself. With regard to his fee entitlement, Molinaro said, my position from day one and from all the documents I provided, my fees are based on one-third of $1.4 million. Transcript, page 513. Not his position from day one. As the referee found in his November 23, 2004 response to OLR, Molinaro told OLR that Robert's settlement was $1.085 million. He claimed fees and costs in his response in the amount of $380,753. On February 11th, he told OLR that the minor settlement fee was $90,000. This was in accordance with the information OLR had received from Molinaro the previous day, and before OLR knew that Molinaro had actually taken and retained more than the $90,000 minor settlement fee would justify. Page 21. Not only was it not his position from day one, it was not from the documents provided. Referee Hansen. The documents prove that Molinaro was entitled to one-third of 1.085 in written settlement of $361,666, exhibits 48 and 49, plus $90,000 for the minor settlement, exhibits 47 and 50. We've talked about the $44,500 transfer. I want to talk just for a minute about the trust account deposits. Molinaro said, such deposits were made to determine whether funds were actually fees earned or expenses advanced for the client. Answer, paragraph 101. Referee Hansen found, Molinaro also had been keeping this money in trust rather than his business account since November as an income shifting measure. And finally, another point where I can summarize subject to your questions. I would just want to reaffirm OLR's position that there are four reasons why two-year suspension is appropriate in this case. And they are because of the dishonest conversion of $9,630 from his client, brother of a lifelong friend, social client, who, under what we understand in the record, is still completely unaware. Second, that he wrongfully evaded approximately $10,000 in state and federal taxes by knowingly and improperly shifting income from 2001 to 2002. Third, that he made misrepresentations to OLR, facts which the referee found, which should have caused him to also conclude that count 10 was violated. And fourth, that he made misleading assertions during the disciplinary proceeding. All these things are well documented in the record, found by the referee who had the opportunity to observe Mr. Molinaro for 2.5 days and has made those recommendations to you. And we ask that you uphold them. In addition, grant OLR's appeal regarding count 10, order restitution of the fee that was wrongfully converted.
I'm sorry, what did you say about restitution?
Restitution of the $9,630 fee that was wrongfully converted. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
The only word that I can think of at this point is trap. He's a bad attorney because from 2002 to 2009, there's no documentation in the file that he hasn't paid, that he has paid back the $9,300. I've provided you with information as to our position. It's a trap. If we pay it back, we're guilty. What are we supposed to do here? Because it wasn't paid, now we're a bad attorney. He's a bad attorney. He misrepresented things. 46 responses, 2.5 days of hearing, 16-month delay in the process. We did everything possible to respond and provide documentation to the Office of Lawyer Regulation. Now, all that's being used to say we did all these things wrong. This is a matter that involves an attorney trying to provide services to his client. He's had conversations with the Mintons. That's not part of this proceeding, but if I'm going to get trapped, I'll make that clear.
Also, if I understand Mr. Saleem correctly, the reason that he is recommending such a stiff penalty is he thinks your client is a chronic liar, to put it straight, that he lied to his friend about what came in and when it came in and how it was paid, that he wasn't truthful with OLR, that he tried to lie to the IRS by shifting funds to a different account. I mean, that's what I read out of everything that he said. And I don't know, you know, if you can respond to that in any way other than you have. I looked up the agreement, which I had read before, and I can see that it says he's entitled to 33 1/3 of the amount paid. And there is a letter that the amount paid was $1.4 million. So if that's all we were talking about here, I'm not sure that Mr. Saleem would be pressing so hard on this. I mean, obviously they interpret the agreement differently, but you've got to say the words say what they say. So, you know, what I hear him saying is there's a lot of stuff here that just indicates a pattern of dishonesty.
And my concern in response to that is agreements were reached with counsel as to how all the money was going to be paid out.
Right.
Now, because of those agreements, as part of the representation, which happens all the time, Attorney Molinaro is accused of lying and accused of wrongdoing. What's the value and the credit to the agreements that have been reached?
Well, if we're just talking about the agreement, I can thoroughly understand your argument. I don't have a problem with that. I looked up the letter. I see what the letter says. $1,175,000 in a check to Attorney Molinaro. They're going to pay, or they did pay $10K to the guardian ad litem, and $215,000 is going to go to the kids' account. Okay, I see all of that. That adds up to $1.4 million. That still can be, quote, the amount paid. What I hear him saying is that these representations during the course of this lead him to believe your client was not a truthful guy. And what I'd like you to, if you can, to tell me how you think he has misperceived your client's responses, because I can interpret the agreement two different ways. That's not what I hear is bugging him the most.
I would first offer, Justice Rogan-Sack, that the reply brief to the OLR appeal on count 10 addresses much of this.
Mm-hmm.
I would offer further, as an example, OLR feels that there has been misrepresentation because of the level of communication that occurred between the attorney for the workers' comp carrier and Attorney Molinaro. The record shows, Attorney Molinaro made it very clear, there was an error in the form filled out by the secretary for Attorney Molinaro. When he had the conversation with the attorney for the other side, he went and looked at it, he realized it was an error, he corrected it. That's what I submit to you, the paper shows, that throughout this, there are those legitimate explanations. The record has been cited to you in the proceedings. I believe that record shows legitimate statements in response. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diedrich, and thank you, Mr. Saleem. In regard to this matter, if you vote no, our cases are always difficult, but OLR cases and lawyer discipline are always extremely difficult, and the court, as it deals with all matters, deals seriously with this one. This ends our hearing in 07AP869D, Office of Lawyer Regulation versus Thomas J. Molinaro. The court will meet in the conference room at 3 p.m. The court is adjourned until its March hearings on OLI, except for our petition and rules hearings. We